And we are pleased to have our guy, Matt Snyder from CBS Sports, on with us to talk some baseball. Matt, how are you today, sir? How's March
I'm great.
Treating you?
You know, pretty good so far. But, hey, IU lost last night, so I was in a bad mood today.
See, our schools make us sour.
Yeah,
I just did
so.
A whole thing on the Aztecs losing last night to Vegas. And Indiana's in a similar spot as the Aztecs. They're trying to get in on the bubble. So a loss is hurtful this time of year. Sorry to hear that, Matt.
I'm getting used to it, though. So unfortunately,
all right. You do have 1976 to fall back on, although that might have been BS before Snyder.
It was.
Yeah,
I was in second grade in 1987.
Oh, 87. That's right. They won again in 87. Keith Smart with the shot. All right, let's get to some baseball here. The guys who think they know everything over at ESPN gave the Padres offseason a D grade. They cited, you know, the inactivity. They cited not getting Sasaki. They cited losing quite a few players off last year's squad. Do you think D is a fair offseason grade for the Padres? I mean, just being honest about it.
Maybe. Like, you're just, when you're that close, you're on the cusp. You know, it's 2022 NLCS, 2024, one game away from getting rid of the Dodgers, who ended up winning the World Series. No World Series championships. Kind of feels like the time to be aggressive. And with the ownership situation at a crossroads, obviously the front office is trying to juggle a lot of things. But if you just look at, do they actually look better than last year? I don't know that you can say that they do. So I understand being that hard on them.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, I mean, look, here's the thing that a lot of people are glossing over in San Diego. I'll be honest with you, because I think people are pretty happy with, you know, Pivetta and, you know, hopefully, you know, between Jason Hayward and Connor Joe and, you know, whoever these other guys are playing left field, they're all having good springs. You know, they'll be able to make up some ground. Now they get Iglesias today. So people are kind of, you know, a little fired up about that. But replacing Profar and Higashioka and Joe Musgrove's hurt and Tanner Scott out of your bullpen and Ha-Seong Kim at shortstop. And I mean, these are a lot of good players that every team in baseball would have trouble replacing, right?
Especially with the year Profar had. I mean, he was so, so good in so many big spots. He felt like, he's not a superstar or anything like that, but he felt like one of those glue guys.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal. And you got 158 games out of him. That's a lot of work to try to replace a glue guy like that. So that felt like a big one. And, you know, Higgy is, again, to get that kind of work out of a part-time catcher. 17 home runs right there alone. That's a lot to replace in a backup catcher. Most hit like three.
Yeah.
So
right.
you're talking about like you're there's a loss in production. There's shortfall in production right there. So I can understand the concerns for sure. But, you know, by the same token, there's a lot of talent here. There's still a lot of talent. And it's not like everything went perfectly last year. And I know that so many national people, he's one of the first guys they think of, so I'm sorry, but Fernando Tatis Jr. still is better than he's been playing. We know he has more talent than this. He's still capable of being a top five MVP candidate. So if he gets back to that level, if Manny Machado plays more like 2023 instead of 24, that helps to make up for a lot of that lost production. And look how good Jackson Merrill was last year. There's always a chance he has another gear in him. You never know. So there are, we'll go back to a big name, Xander Bogaerts. He's probably past his prime, but you know, it's 32. He's not 40. So there are ways on the roster to say this guy could be better. Cronenworth. Another one's Cronenworth. You've seen him play better before, and he's not too old. So there are ways within the roster to say, yeah, there's lost production, but some of the guys that are on the team still can pick up the slack.
Agreed.
Talking to Matt Snyder of CBS Sports here about the Padres, about spring training, and left field for the Padres is going to be a platoon because you said it, Jerickson Profar now in Atlanta, they needed to fill that spot, and it looks like it's going to start as a platoon between Connor Joe and Jason Hayward. My question is, do platoons in your mind work, or do they need to have someone who is more often than not going to be playing left field?
Well, they you probably will, right? Just by virtue of most pitchers
right
are right-handed,
lefty, yeah.
So that makes Jason Hayward the kind of the everyday player, even though they're going to sub in Connor Joe against lefties. Yes, if deployed properly, and if there are guys who have drastic enough splits, it doesn't even have to be drastic, but if it's a situation where the hitter is definitely a good hitter against right-handers, but really terrible against lefties or vice versa, yes, it can absolutely work. I don't know how much more offensively there is to Jason Hayward at this point in his career.
Yeah.
But to have him only play against righties and to have him play defense in left field, I think that he can still be a good defensive player out there. He's always been fundamentally sound and a smart player, so he will be good on the bases. You're going to get a low average, but he might still still occasionally run into one against right-handed pitching for a home run. So they're toward the bottom of the order. It can work fine. We've seen flashes of Connor Joe with the stick. I think that they can be adequate, but I wouldn't bet on much better than that.
Yeah, I think you're right. Matt Snyder, CBS Sports. And you hit it right on the head, Matt. I mean, these guys, they have, you know, these star players. And every single one of them actually could be better than they were a year ago. The one I'm going to be honest with you, Matt, that I'm worried about, he gives me personally no reason to worry, but the world of a rookie going into the second year,
yeah,
always worries me. And Corbin Carroll was a, you know, pretty good example of it, I hate to say, last
terrible
year.
Terrible first half.
Yeah,
yeah, so like he woke up in the second half, but
right.
Yeah.
So what does Jackson Merrill do to prevent it from happening? It seems like he's doing everything right. This kid works his butt off. But, man, these sophomore jinx or whatever you call it, it's just kind of in the back of my mind.
Well, that stems from, I'm not a big superstition guy as it is,
right,
in terms of analyzing. But it stems from the league just saw the kid for the first time, and they had a whole year to see what he's good at. Maybe in the off season, there's a lot of ways to scout, to look for holes, and then he gets approached differently in the second year, and he has to adjust to the adjustments that the league made to him. But nowadays, there's so much scouting. There's so much technology. I kind of feel like it's shortened. It's compacted into where you might be exposed 2 months into your rookie year for 3 or 4 weeks, and then you have coaches helping you to adjust to the adjustments that the league made to you. And I kind of feel like he's probably already weathered that. Carroll, for me, there might have been some World Series hangover there in terms of it was the first full season of his big league career. Then he had to play an additional nearly 20 games in the playoffs. Then it shortened. Plus, he had all those shoulder injuries. I think that was a confluence of events, and there was much more to it than just it's the league getting another look at him and having reacted. With Merrill, there isn't much like that. There are a few extra playoff games, but not a whole month of them. And teams would have already been looking to make adjustments to him, and he's already faced one of the best teams at advanced scouting in the league, and the Dodgers a lot of times, including in the playoffs. So I think he's probably already seen everything that they're going to throw at him. So, yeah, I mean, there's always a possibility that he won't be as good, but I wouldn't be overly worried about it. So hopefully I quelled your concerns a little bit.
You did. I feel quelled.
Right.
I'm quelled. Thank you.
It's not easy to quell Chris, let me tell you.
Not an easy thing to do.
We're talking to Matt Snyder, CBSSports.com here on 97.3 The Fan. And I was reading some articles. You did a Snyder soapbox. I want to get to that later with the automated balls and strikes system. But you also, with all of your CBS Sports coworkers, put together a list of 5 teams that made the playoffs last year that are likely or may not make the playoffs this year. Padres were on the list. How much do you really think the Padres are going to miss the playoffs?
Yeah, I didn't have a hand in that.
We know Matt's a Padre guy.
Oh, RJ did do that one specifically. You're right. You're right. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Sorry to leave you in.
But let's see. So, okay. Phillies, Braves, Mets. I think all three of those teams are going to make the playoffs, even though I think the Nationals are going to be better than last year and are going to push them a little more. I think all three of those teams are going to make the playoffs. Dodgers are obviously going to win the West. Sorry. You're going to have a division winner from the Central. So you're left with one playoff team. I think the Diamondbacks are better than they were last year, and they won 89 games last year. You're right in that range then. So it's either, you know, Padres or Diamondbacks, or you're knocking out one of the teams from the East, which is possible. By no means is it impossible. The Padres won 4 more games than both the Braves and the Mets last year. But I will say I would feel better about your chances if you were on the American League side. The AL is way weaker than the National League. The NL is very tough with these playoff caliber teams. I think the Padres are absolutely going to be in the mix. I will not be surprised if they miss the playoffs. I will not be surprised if they make it.
Yeah, it's a crowded field.
That's a fair answer.
It's a very fair answer. It's a crowded field. All right, we don't have a time to get back to you.
Okay,
so I'll ask him about the...
You take my great question.
Yes, I'm quelled over here. I'm in good shape. The balls and strikes thing, you've loved it. I got to say, as an old curmudgeon, I haven't hated it, but I wish it didn't happen.
What? You have hated this thing.
No, I haven't hated it.
You said, why do we need to be perfect?
That's what I said. I don't think we need it.
But we don't with this system.
But with this, I haven't actually hated the actual procedure that's taking place before my eyes. Matt, you're good with it, yes?
So, okay, when they first started talking about, you know, when people refer to it as robot umps, and they tried it in the league. Is it the Atlantic? No, it's one of the leagues that the Major League Baseball, it's not affiliated with Major League Baseball. It's an independent league, but they try it out.
I think it might be the Atlantic. I remember.
It might be. It's something like that. But they used it where every single pitch, it just told the umpire if it was a ball or a strike, and he had to follow it.
Right.
I did not really like that. And we were worried about guys who can make pitches break that much, just clipping the very bottom of the front part of the strike zone with something that ends up in the dirt. There was a concern with that. So I was against that. Last year, I went to AAA Indianapolis, where Paul Skeens was pitching, to watch. And I saw Yasmani Grandal twice challenge a 3-2 count where he thought he walked. And both times, the ABS system within about 3 seconds showed that he was wrong and it was actually strike three. And I was like, this is amazing because it's not every single pitch. It's just not going to the dugout where, remember the first year of replay, how horrible it was when the managers would walk out on the field and take forever and see if they wanted to challenge it. It was horrific to watch. This is right away, catcher, hitter, or pitcher. Right away, just your gut feeling is that's a miss at a big spot, so I'm going to tap my head. And they're limited. That's the key. It can't be to the point where it was where Chris said, we don't have to be perfect. Well, you don't, but this isn't striving for perfection. It's each team gets two, and you're probably going to keep those in the holster for the late innings because if there's nobody on base in the fifth inning of a four-run game, why would you waste it? Yeah. But if the bases are loaded in the bottom of the eighth and it's tied and the umpire misses a pitch that's a foot outside and calls strike three, all of a sudden you tap your head and that gets fixed and that's a ball. Now you walk in a run, and now that mattered. That swung the game. So we have the ability to fix game-altering calls that would be living in infamy, basically. And I would have to think, I've obviously never officiated at a high level, but I used to do high school football. On the times that we went back and watched videos and I saw that I missed a call, it is a heart-sinking, just horrible feeling. You never want to be the person that costs somebody something by an honest mistake. This is just another avenue to fix an honest mistake. And honestly, it's so hard for umpires these days because the pitcher's stuff is so good and they're supposed to know the strike zone within, what, a centimeter? Come on, man, with a naked eye. I don't mind giving them a little help in the late innings.
So how long before baseball agrees with you and, you know, says, okay, let's next season. Okay.
Yeah. I think that since it in the spring, there's only been Max Scherzer who complained about it, but he complains about everything.
We've talked about him a lot in this whole complaint.
Yeah,
that
he really does. He complains about every aspect of everything. So
yeah, he does.
That doesn't even move the needle. So it's, I think that they're seeing one of the big ones is when the pitcher misses a spot, but it ends up in the strike zone and the umpire gets fooled because the catcher was set up way outside and he missed in, but it was still a strike.
Right.
The very first one fixed that. That's still a strike. The batter doesn't know exactly where the catcher is set up and know the pitcher missed a spot. You just took a pitch right down the middle. That's a strike. I don't care if the pitcher missed a spot.
It's good. Hey, you know what?
Are you quelling him again?
No, Scraby's right. I hate the idea that we can't ever make a mistake because the world is not, you know, perfect.
It's not.
But what Matt's describing,
and that's why I was always against full on every single pitch.
Yeah, but what Matt's describing with the head tap 2 times a game, I can live with that. You know, because I still remember Cronenworth struck out in a, you know, bases loaded one night, ninth inning with on a pitch in the other batter's box. And now it's 2 years ago, so it didn't happen that often, but that would have been a nice time to have it.
And, you know, you get so mad at the umpire, but, man, it's really hard to judge those things within the accuracy they're expected to have. But it's human nature. You get mad at the umpire. That's why I'm like, I'm sure they would like, if they missed it, to get bailed out by that challenge.
Yeah, agreed. You know what I like? Matt, you're so nice to us to come on as often as you do, but what I appreciate is that you really enjoy talking to the fans out there.
You do.
And I really I just want to let you know. I appreciate that.
It's about the best compliment anybody could give me. You know, that's what I care about the most.
Well, I just, you know, thanks. Because, you know, you don't just come on and answer the questions. You're enthusiastic. You're into it. You're trying to inform our listeners. I know they appreciate it. I know I do.
You need to come to San Diego so, A, we could take you to a Padres game, and, B, you could come in studio with us
for an hour or so.
I
you
agree.
Don't, you don't think well, he can get
been,
into the
I've
game on his own?
I've been in studio with Chris and Tony before at the winter meetings that came in you guys' booth.
Oh, yeah, yes. You were there, yes. I meant, like, in studio, in our humble abode.
We want you on our home turf.
Yes.
All right, Matt. Thanks,
hopefully
buddy.
Soon.
Appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Matt.
Take care. Matt's...
I
turned off my own mic. Matt Snyder, boop. Yeah, that was not what I meant to do.
This is a test of the emergency alert system.